Come on, for Christ's sake, let's hear it. I've come all the way from civilization here. And it's a hell of a trip out here. So this is, now at ease, I'll bust your ass, kid. And I look like I can do it, don't I? You better believe it. So this is Dutchess County. We hear rumors of it in New York. and driving down, you know, down to this beautiful area here, I see all these trees and birds. I drive past parking lot A. There's some guy trying to make a chick over there by line A12, in case you're curious. It's going on right now. Take a look at this school scene. Jesus Christ, look at this. My God. I imagine there are even some people in this crowd that spend a lot of their time bitching. Makes me wonder. Can't you see yourself getting up to heaven? You look around and say, for Christ's sake, what the hell is this? Oh, it's beginning to soak through what I'm talking about, huh? Well, you know, I went to a school. My school. Hard to believe, isn't it, honey? I went to a school that was roughly twice the size of the entire Dutchess County, in fact. It was a gigantic factory in Indiana. And I remember the tremendous debate that went on, an enormous debate, you know, student council and all that stuff, as to whether or not we were going to buy plastic ivy for the walls. I'm serious. Which we finally did. We got it from Sears Roebuck. And I can remember at 2 o'clock in the morning in this little concrete cubicle, see, that was in the dormitory, my dormitory, see, room 627D. And there I am in this little cubicle. It's made out of solid concrete. It had this cast iron bed. Had a cast iron bureau drawers there, and obscenities have been scratched into the green paint preceding graduates, you know. And I'm standing in there looking out at a goddamn window at 2 in the morning. The wind is blowing off the lake. Off the lake, 200 miles away, see. Oh, Indiana is so flat, you can throw a rock all the way from one end to the other of the state, you know, no problem. And I hear the plastic ivy rattling. You could hear it go. And in the ivy were thousands of starlings. And at that point, I grew to love starlings. Because they were doing in ivy at 2 in the morning, plastic ivy. What starlings do all day long. And they were doing it with great gusto. But there I was in my monastic pad. And if you go to Indiana, Bloomington, there isn't a girl within miles that is an honest, real girl. Once in a while, I'd see typical Indiana co-ed going down through the quad with her hair up in aluminum rheostats. And she's wearing these Montgomery Ward toreadors, you know. The Picasso print, this three-eyed chick on her ass, you know, and the eyes are going up and down. I said, Jesus, is this what it's about? Is this education? And I could hear those damn birds doing it. I don't know what she's laughing about. And at that point, I realized, of course, there's two worlds in this veil of tears. There's them that got it, and there's the others. And them that got it never know it. Oh, yeah, if you wonder who Wanda Hickey is the girl that all men eventually settle for. The age of 14, she was mentally the mother of three. And Daphne Bigelow is the girl that all men see off in the middle distance, constantly, getting off and on stages. They're always disappearing with somebody who looks like John Lindsay. So it's two worlds. it's always. I'm just curious how many of you, here I am, I'm the representative of showbiz. See, I live in the village. You can tell, can't you? Oh yeah, in the village, if I walk down the street with a tie and a coat and all that jazz, man, I would be looked upon as either sick or an uptown fag. You know? Or possibly both, which caused great excitement down there, see? And I live, you don't mind if I tell you the truth here, do you today?
No.
Such language. No, I'm serious, you know, because I'm sure that immediately after my performance here, there's going to be somebody write an angry letter to the board. How did you get that slob here? And already three ladies with blue hair have left. He doesn't talk like that on the radio, Madge. Either does John Gambling. You remember the day that John Gambling on his morning show said it? You mean you didn't hear what he said? Well, I want you all to imagine the grooviest word you can imagine Gambling saying. He did. Right out loud. And that you could feel Jersey heaving out there. Because I guess there are still people today, and I'm sure that in this area there are plenty of them, who actually read the Reader's Digest. What's more, quote it, you know. Well, you know, the other day, I can't do a full-fledged performance here today because this is a very official school. I mean, she's sitting on the stage here watching me to make sure I don't make any really snappy moves. And I don't work from podia. That's the plural. It's the only thing I learned in Latin. But on the other hand, the only thing I learned throughout my entire grade school was Bolivia exports tin. I'm afraid to go to Bolivia. They may not, you know. Whole education down the drain, you know. So what the hell is it you're talking about, senor? It's rubber. I wonder how many guys sitting in this crowd right now have that little burning knot of total fear in their gut that they ain't going to make it this semester. How many of you feel like you're faking it? And I could see others looking at others saying, what's he talking about? And the guy at our center said, I don't know. Some kind of nut from New York. And Well, listen, man. I lived out in the village, you know, and the other day somebody gave me a call from the New York Post. And they said, we're doing a piece, an article on what people do who are in showbiz, you know, who are performers and that. What do they do after the show? What actually do they do? I thought to myself, Jesus, do they want the truth? Or do they want me to, you know, tell the usual showbiz story? Well, I leave the air at 11 o'clock, and of course then I go over to Normie Mailer's place, and we call Georgie Plimpton, and of course Gloria drops by, Gloria Steinem, we pinch her for a while, and then we go over to Sardi's to see Jimmy Baldwin, and well, you know, that's what people want to think, you know, they think that showbiz goes on forever when it ain't on stage, you know, that nothing but this wonderful crowd all hanging around, talking to each other, and coming up with brilliant concepts, dealing with total world issues. And I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. Do they really want to know what I do? Do you want to know? That's right. One little girl says, no. She just got that look, you know, a latent mother. She doesn't want to hear anything like that, you know. No. God. Wanda Hickey's with us today. Esther Jane Alberry, I dated her. A little fire plug with feet. I don't know what I saw on her. Esther Jane was the kind of girl that sweat 24 hours a day, you know. Had a nice mustache, though. Well trimmed, you know. You know, when I'm thinking about this, you know, shall I, you know, here I am, following these official people here at Dutchess County, Dr. Sidney Hook, very official people who deal with world issues. I don't know whether you consider life a world issue. That's my field. And I thought to myself, should I tell the Post what I really do? I'm thinking about that. This is the moment of truth. I don't think people want to know. Not really. And I'm supposed to call them back tomorrow to tell them. I'll tell you what I do, if you really want to know. What happens in showbiz the way it really is? Well, all right, I live in the village at 10th and Bleecker. And that's, all of you have a secret dream of going to the village. Now, it's some kind of a vast compost heap of humanity. An enormous fruitcake of existence. That's closer to the truth, actually. And I live at 10th and Bleecker, right in the heart of it, see. Get off the air at 11 o'clock. I wander downtown. Finally get down there, it's about 1 o'clock in the morning, it's dark. And I live in a brownstone, 3 stories high. On the top story are 2 dykes. I'm telling you the truth. You want to know? I'll tell you. And right below me are 2 guys who wear silver shoes. Made out of Reynolds wrap or some goddamn thing. And you ought to hear the whooping and hollering that goes up and down the air shaft at 2 or 3 in the morning, you know. That interesting crew there, see. And there I am, right smack in the middle. See? 2 o'clock in the morning, I go walking up those stairs real careful. Oh, no, not, I don't want to make a sound, see. Because this is the high point of my life. Every day I do this. I get to that top of the flight of stairs, and there's a flat platform up there with my door. It's dark. I put the key in the lock. Been practicing that for 2 years. So to make no sound, I turn it real careful. It is now unlocked. I wait 2 beats. 1. Incidentally, timing is important. In all of life, believe me. 1. 2. I wait another beat. 1. And carefully pull. Pitch black in there. Not a sound. I can feel the excitement rising up in my gut. Fantastic tidal wave of passion. This is my moment. Jesus Christ, it's happening. I reach in, put my hand on the light switch. Three beats. 1. Getting my knees set. My muscles are bulging. 2. 3. I flip the switch on. The lights go on. Millions of cockroaches. In I go and I start trapping. I get them little bastards every night. Some nights. Millions of them. Some nights, you know, some nights I get 700 with one plump, you know. I get them off guard every night. They're marching around, little marching bands holding flags, football games, a whole bit. Some night I get 800-900 of them. 40. That's my hobby. Killing cockroaches. I have a beautiful one, 7.5 pounds, mounted on the wall. Competition cockroach, and there he is. All right, that's a bad story. Now you know why I don't tell the Post. Makes me wonder, does Johnny Carson, has he ever seen a cockroach? I'll know this, he doesn't own one. Doesn't have his own. And so there you have it, the truth. Every night, Shepard goes home and kills cockroaches. I don't know what Mailer does. Probably something equally sickening. I wonder how many of you measure your lives against showbiz subconsciously and don't know that you're doing it. And you find your life is drab and dull and irritating compared to the elegant people you see. All day long, all night long, you see Dick Cavett sitting there, looking handsome and sharp. And he's always entertaining people like, Anthony Eden, Gloria Steinem, his friends. And then look at yours. And he always has the right thing to say. What you don't know is the son of a bitch who's got 7 writers. That's right. Everyone writing those clever little ad-libs, those little zingy questions. He's got 9 lighting directors, making sure that his cheekbones always look high. The angle is right. By the way, the other lighting directors make all the guests look short and squat and toad-like, so that he always rises beautifully above them. But then you look at your life. You go slumping through, ad-libbing your life. I wonder how many of you secretly measure your existence against all this kind of thing. You'd love to live like Hef. By the way, he really does have fun. I hate to tell you, he enjoys women to the fullest. All the things you'd like to believe are not true. He ain't sick. He just does all the stuff that you vaguely dream of at 3 o'clock in the morning. Go skittering across the ceiling of your life like headlights passing by, and Hef's doing it. No wonder we hate that son of a bitch. It's true, we always hate people that really do this stuff. I wonder how many times it's like me, you know, I come home, you know, and I turn on my TV set at night. I wonder how many of you got that late movie hang-up. Yeah, there's only a few of us who wait up every night at 3 in the morning to see the Preparation H Man. My favorite TV character. They never put him on in the daytime, you know, because, or in the early evening, because those are such clean-limbed people that live in the day in the early evening. Oh, yeah, you know. And late at night at 3 in the morning, the Preparation H Man comes on. He's addressing all us, the real ones, you know. People with the ultimate itch in their gut, you know. You ever seen him? He looks like a defrocked Methodist minister, you know. He does. He's got this black suit, you know, and you could just imagine, you know, little hanky-panky in the choir loft one day, and now he's now he's selling Preparation H, you know. In the same racket, basically, you know. And he looks out. What the hell are you applauding? No, I always wait for him. He comes on at 3 in the morning on Channel 2 every night, see? And he comes on immediately after the Double Mint gum commercial, which I always sing along with, you know, double your pleasure, double your fun. And at 3 in the morning, you've got a rotten turn of mind. I'll tell you, you think to yourself, geez, I wonder if I could double my pleasure, you know, by chewing Double Mint gum. You imagine you're swinging with this chick, and she's, for Christ's sake, get rid of the gum. So I'm doubling my pleasure. You have no idea, you know. Oh, yeah, you know, and on comes the Preparation H Man, you know, and he appears, and he looks right out at you in the audience, and he's got this piercing eyes, big black rimmed glasses, and he says, Preparation H is guaranteed and medically proven to relieve itching. I never miss it, you know. I said, Jesus, is it the itch he's talking about? What itch? And have you ever noticed the houses, the places where these people in TV commercials live? The Preparation H man apparently is in an office that involves itself in global strategy. There's a globe over here with pins all over it. You know, hot spots of action for Preparation H. I don't know. You know, couscous does a bad thing to some people, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of pins around the Arab states, so I don't know what the hell it is they eat over there. And back of them are all these books. Almost every one of these guys has a bookcase full of books. Have you noticed that on TV? It's got a sort of indiscriminate, vaguely it looks a little college deanish, you know. It's an official office. You know damn well he's bound on important business. The preparation, he looks out, medically proved and guaranteed to relieve itching. And there I am, see. This is the high point, you know. I love TV of this type, see. And all around me, out in the darkness, are other Priscilla Lane fans who are watching the late, late movie, which is apparently recorded underwater. Movies are very indiscriminate at 4 a.m. You'll get one reel of a Tex Ritter film and get a quick reel of Henry V. You'll see a all of it seems to have been recorded in some curious recording studio and put into Greek subtitles. It doesn't matter. You just sit there, planes flying by and marching soldiers and men constantly looking down into people's eyes and saying, Melissa, I have never felt like this. Then you see the Foreign Legion. Christ, it's all there, you know. And the Preparation H man says it's medically proved and guaranteed to relieve itching. And then he does something I think is highly symbolic in our time. He reaches behind him and pulls out a book. We are book people. We believe in books. In themselves, we believe in books. Not what they say, but in themselves. I mean, late night TV is filled with guys who have written books. Who, if they said the same thing to you in a bar, you'd kick him in the ass. Or you'd laugh. Oh, come on, for Christ's sake. Written a book, now it's official. Put it down on paper, you can carry it around. You know, it costs $1.95 and soft cover. See? It says Anchor, double important soft vellum edition, annotated. Paul Krasner's annotations. And the book says, medical proof. How can you argue with that, you know? He opens it up, and that, you know, a typical TV book has 7-inch high letters, see? Three words to the page. That's the kind most of you can read anyway, you know? It says, Preparation H. Medically proved. And guaranteed to relieve itching. That's a TV book. I wonder how many doctors would love to have that book. Anything proved, you know. Now, the trouble with me is I have basically an evil mind. No, I've always admired people who don't. I mean, people who really get excited about Mother's Day. It's an interesting crowd. I mean, people who really believe in their Buick. You seen their commercials? Something to believe in. I can see this guy. He says, I believe in my Electra. Everything else has crumbled around me, but I believe in them holes on the side there, them three little holes. And my mind at 3 a.m. works in evil ways. If I hadn't had that kind of mind, I could have gone on to become Steve Allen. Maybe even Mike Douglas. You know what I do? 3 a.m, I see them medically proving it. You shouldn't see that kind of stuff when you're watching TV. The way I see it, they've got these little pens and these people standing around, you know, with white coats with numbers on them. And a doctor's got a clipboard. He says, number 7 is scratching again. All right. The Preparation H one is just standing there. such a sick sight. Why do I think this? I love to watch the commercials for the hidden meaning in them, you know. How many of you measure your lives against these things? How about that lady that comes on? You know, there's one beautiful color. This lady shows up, and there's a quick shot of her full face. It looks like she's wearing a blonde football helmet, you know. Strange hair, you know. She's a kind of an ugly lady, see. And she appears to be in somebody's job. How's that for a bit of Ionesco? Incidentally, I'd like to point out, any of you are drama cuckoos here and are curious about drama, I think some of the great dramas of our time are appearing in the 58-second commercials. Now, do you know that all commercials follow exactly the same basic writing and dramatic rules as all drama? The introduction, the prologue, conflict. And then the battle is joined. And then, of course, the conclusion and epilogue. All in 58 damn seconds. I'm serious. Follow a commercial and watch and see. Say to yourself, the minute the commercial opens up, what is the conflict? What is it going to be? Well, here comes this lady on. One of the most beautiful examples of this lady. And incidentally, they deal in all kinds of techniques. Not just representational theater, you know, where Charlie meets Myrtle and they make the scene. This is typical storytelling theater. They deal in the theater of the absurd, the theater of terror, the theater of Ionesco, Genet, Beckett. For example, how many plays have you seen set in somebody's John? That ain't Arthur Miller. Not even Edward Albee. You can imagine Genet doing this. And there it is, see? And there's a lady in there. And she's got this funny-looking football helmet on. Already, it's getting a little out of focus. You're losing reality, see? She's in somebody else's John. This drama takes place in that John. She looks down. You don't know what she's looking at. But she looks down. A look of terror crosses her face. She looks right at the camera and says, "Blue water! Blue water!" She's, now, if you've got the kind of mind I've got, instantly you think, "Holy Christ!" Oh, man, somebody's in trouble in that family. We had lectures in the army about that, you know. But this does not bother her, see, because this is the theater of the absurd. Now, if it was the theater of the real, she would very carefully leave and close the door behind her. But this is the theater of the absurd. So what does she do? She sees blue water. She takes the back of the John off. Now, she's in a friend's house. Would you like, can you imagine a friend of yours looking in your John, you know? Seeing what you got stashed in the back there, you know? She takes this damn thing off and she looks down in this thing, and here you are watching, see, all the while, secretly measuring your life against this. Already she's doing stuff you'd never do. And she looks in the John, and what's in the back but this little 3-inch-high son of a bitch? A little 3-inch-high man. Now that's the theater of the absurd, see? And he's in a rubber rowboat. He's rowing around. He's in the back of the John in a rowboat. Good God Almighty, this is, Janae could never imagine anything. Now, what does she say? Does she say what you would say in your life? Like, "Holy Christ, you're 3 inches high. What are you doing to the John?" She says nothing except blue water. And what does he say? He says, "Yeah." All in 58 seconds. You have been through the bowels of hell. A 3-inch-high man rowing a rubber rowboat in the blue lagoon in the back of the John. My God Almighty. So you walk out of there, see. Your life is so drab. No blue water in your John. Just, you know. You lift the back off, what's in there? A thing goes. Once again, your life is pedestrian, limping along the road of nothing. I wonder how many of you are bugged at your old man because he does not fit the image that's projected 24 hours a day on all channels. The television daddy. You know how the television daddy is. First of all, he's 42 and he doesn't know his ass from third base. And what's more, he's delighted that you tell him that. That's very important. Every television daddy takes advice from 12-year-old kids happily.
With full knowledge, they know more about the world than he does.
She's probably got one at home. Have you ever tried any of that stuff on your old man? How about the one, you know, there's always a 12-year-old girl looking at daddy as daddy is shaving in the morning with desperation in his eye. That's a typical commercial. This is taken from a real one, shaving. And by the way, guys, have you ever measured your shaving against the TV type shaving? They go, yeah. Oh, Jesus. And they have so much fun shaving. There's one guy, you know, that goes, oh, lemon lime, oh my God. It's fun to shave. I've tried them all, grape, cranberry, menthol. Nothing, the same thing every morning. Oh, shit, you know. Thin spray of blood, you know. And what do you do then? When you try this stuff, you think that you got a bad can. You are unworthy. All the other people go to the real A&P. Get the real can of Right Guard. How many of you have tried Right Guard and it just doesn't work? Then you really feel inadequate. And there's that commercial with daddy shaving. A classical TV daddy. Shaving away. Oh, I've got to get the order today. I have not sold a house in 6 weeks. I don't know what's wrong. Oh. And here's his daughter, Miriam. She is an incredibly glandular 12. And she's peeking into the John while daddy's shaving, desperation pouring out of his eyes. He looks like Willie Loman, about to have a bad day in Boston, you know. Oh, I've got to get that, I've got to do it. And she holds up this thing and says, Daddy. Yes, Miriam. What is it, Miriam? Daddy. It's Micrin, Daddy. And Daddy, remember, he's 42. He's never heard of mouthwash. It's a whole new idea to him.
What is it?
It has foaming action, Daddy.
Bubbles.
See, Daddy, being basically a child, is amused by the bubbles that rise. This is his daughter's way of getting him to use mouthwash. As a child, he doesn't understand these things like germs and that, but he does understand bubbles coming to the top. She says, yes, Daddy, use it once a day and it has 4-hour cleansing germ-destroying action.
How do you use it?
She said, well, it's just like your bourbon, Daddy. You slosh it around your mouth.
next week, the next thing we see, Daddy has washed out his mouth with mouthwash for the first time in his life. A whole new era is opening up before Daddy because of 12-year-old Miriam. In the next scene, there's a quick cut, and you see Daddy leaping out of a brand new Cadillac Eldorado. He's running up to the porch, and he says, "I just sold the White House. I made it." Thanks to Micron and Miriam. Jesus. And then they disappear. And you sit there and you think, God, that's the way life should be. You think what would happen if you told your old man that he's got bad breath? He'd then show you how he used to practice drop kicks. That makes him a dirty son of a bitch. Bad daddy. Have you noticed that nobody ever tells a kid anything in a commercial? Kids tell other people things. So that's the way the life should be. One of my favorite daddies is the one sitting in the living room. He's reading a paper, you know, a big slob. He's sitting there. All daddy's mouths move when they read. In comes his son, tall, beautiful, handsome, great wavy hair, clean chisel profile. He drifts in. You like that? Daddy looks up.
"Hey, how come you're late, huh, Ralph?"
"I put gas in the car."
"Gas? What do you mean?"
"Well, Daddy, there's a gas pump. It's shaped like this. Number 260, number 270, number 422. And they put the pipe in the back and they turn it on. It squirts gas in the car." Daddy always wondered what they were messing around the back of the car for all those times with that long hose, but Junior told him about gas. Classic Dad. That's the way daddy should be. Malleable, soft, totally innocent, and completely open to all advice, however dimwit. It's like my dad. Every time I see those commercials, I think, how would my old man have played it? For example, there's this one commercial, you know, that comes on. You might have seen it. It comes on in the middle of the afternoon. And it shows a beautiful family. Watch these things for their dramatic build. On the screen, it's in beautiful color. This is an afternoon commercial for the people, you know, who believe in things. This would never appear late at night. The scoffers would raise hell, you know. Comes running right in the middle of Against the Storm, or As the World Turns, or When the Hell Is It Ever Going to End? Brought to you by Procter & Gamble. God, you ever seen any of those things in the afternoon? Oh, it's fantastic, the lives. People get amnesia every 5 minutes. Gangsters are always coming in and taking over the local school, which looks like Howard Johnson's in the picture, you know? She must know Howard, I don't know. There's this beautiful commercial, though, that comes on in the afternoon. Watch for it. The car appears, and it's on a TV road. How many of you love just once in your life to drive on a TV road? The sea is always off to the left, waving palm trees, breezes. Not another car for millions of miles around. Not like the roads that I know. Have any of you ever driven on Route 22? My favorite American road. I love to leave the city, you know, and go through the Holland Tunnel. You see all those. How many of you have ever been in the Holland Tunnel? Have you, really? It's an experience. You get in that tunnel, you know, and you're leaving civilization. You're going to the States, see, and you travel through. You get in the middle of the tunnel. Invariably, there's no night, there's no day there. Just yellow light bulbs. 3 in the morning, it's the same.
I often get the feeling this is a purgatory, suspended between heaven and hell. You don't know which one is which. Some nights I get the urge to run out when I'm the only car in the tunnel and paint a big crack on a wall. I don't know why, I just want to do it. It's just one of those things, see? And then you come out of that tunnel, you go, boom. There's a big green and white sign that says, "Welcome to beautiful Union City." That's guts. That takes guts to call Union City beautiful. And that's a basic statement of American optimism, American romanticism. You look around at beautiful Union City and you see all those mafia guys skulking in and out of the gas tanks, used car lots for miles, and you can smell the drifting aroma of Secaucus coming your way. Over there is the Monsanto chemical plant. Beautiful Union City. And directly ahead of you on Route 22, as you come whipping past the Route 3 drive-in. By the way, the Route 3 drive-in's got a great big sign. It says, "Get more out of life. Go to a movie." That's an interesting theological thought. Ever thought of the philosophy of getting more out of life? Life. By sitting on your behind in a Mustang, in a gravel lot, watching a great big curved screen that's nothing but shadows of people who are pretending to be people that another guy invented. Getting more out of life. Once in a while, the guy in the car next to you, you can hear the window go down and he heaves out. After 4 gallons of Chinese egg roll and all that A&W root beer. All around you, the cars in the darkness getting more out of life. You're sitting there and Charlton Heston is walking around on the screen wearing this bearskin rug, you know, carrying these big tablets. Lightning bolts are flashing. You got a little Japanese 2-inch tin speaker that's going. You can hardly hear it, and it's the voice of God. Thou shalt not kill. Christ, no wonder we don't believe in anything anymore. You drive on past the Route 3 driving, and there it is, rising up out of the haze and the smoke and the fog on beautiful Route 22. You see the flagship coming towards you. You know the flagship? It's kind of the epitome of Jersey slob art. A building built like a ship for God knows what nefarious schemes. It never worked. And forever that ship is awash right next to Denison Clothiers. 100 yards down is Rayco Instant Seat Covers. It says Instant Seat Covers. 30 seconds, we change your seat covers. And you wonder, what the hell do they do in Jersey? They got to change your seat covers in 30 seconds. Is this another Jersey dream of action that never happens? Over there to your left is the Great Eastern, the great discount store in the sky. How many of you have ever been into a really big discount place like Great Eastern or Two Guys? It's a sexual. Millions of people going around with the carts and the voices are saying, "And in just 5 minutes there will be a sale of bananas, 49 cents a pound in just 5 minutes. You're walking around through the lawn furniture department. By the way, that's where you see life in the lawn furniture department in Great Eastern. They're having their annual lawn furniture sales right now. You can stock up for next spring. Right now, the Great Eastern. You can buy a set of 7 dwarfs for your lawn. In lifetime polyethylene. These bastards last. Never dissolves. And they're 3/4 life size. What the hell is 3/4 life size of a 7 dwarf? serious. You can buy them. You can set them all around on your lawn, and they squirt fertilizer out of the ears. They're functional dwarfs. I think to myself, Jesus, can you imagine? You know, this stuff, polyethylene will outlast marble.